Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and I have with me today two fellow New Jersey law enforcement officers, and I'll let them give themselves the introductions, but we're going to talk about some interesting stuff that they're doing here in the state of New Jersey. But without further ado, my two new guests here today. Fellas, it's a pleasure being here today. You guys can just take a minute, introduce yourselves.
I'm Scott Anderle. I've been in law enforcement. I'm in my 19th year. I've been training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for as long as I've been a police officer. I currently am a lieutenant, and I run the investigation division at my department.
Matt LaKelt. I'm with the same department for 20 years, training the same amount of time as Scott in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, about 20 years.
Did you guys meet each other in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Yes, we did.
Dude, what was it like 20 years ago into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and like nobody knew about it?
It was like a crazy underground club of a bunch of weirdos. It was not what it is today, where you have all these polished schools. You would be lucky to get a room with guys that had, you know, like a black belt. You know, for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, there's white belts, blue belts, purple belts, brown belts, and black belts. And a black belt was unheard of. So if you could get in a room with one of those guys, you were so happy. And it was hard to find. Now you see schools all over the place and you see that the sport has grown. It's much easier to find competent people to train you. But back then it was a bag of mixed nuts. So Matt was one of the nuts that I ended up in the room with.
It was actually funny. He made the point that, 20 years ago, you'd show up to muster with like a little hickey thing on your neck from training, but you never talked about it at work. It was just like weird injuries and you connect with another dude with other weird injuries.
The first rule of Cop Fight Club is what? There is no Cop Fight Club.
No Fight Club.
Yeah, that really is. That's how it was. And if you competed, I competed a lot and I'd get injured and you couldn't say anything. And of course, like a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu injury, it's not like a cool black eye like you see in boxing. It's like a scratch down your neck or a rash where you look like you got attacked by a cat. So people would just look at you like, what?
I tore the cartilage in my rib and missed like, a month of work. And it was very hard to explain.
How did you get into it though? What was the initial thing? How did you find out about it?
Wrestling. From wrestling and then that first UFC, seeing what was going on, kind of validating all this time we talked how great wrestling was and just having an opportunity to continue, grappling.
Who told you about it? Who'd you start with?
I started actually at Ricardo Almeida's in Weartown, I believe. I would drive like an hour and a half to this like racquetball room and just get beat up by skinny little people. And then from there, it was word of mouth. There wasn't so much reliance on social media platforms.
Well, there was no social media essentially, right?
Well, yeah, I guess that.
You had MySpace.
True. Yeah. Now you just Google in BJJ NJ and, 20 schools show up, but everything was word of mouth. I think we ran into each other at Wilkie's where we actually met in Bridgewater.
I used to hear that one a lot.
Yeah.
He was really the first
guy. We're in a Rodas train there, right?
Yep. Yeah. Pretty much all of us that have been around a while at some point got our start there. He was one of the first guys that actively were training Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and they called it ground fighting back then. And
they all those Somerset guys were going there, right?
Yeah, for a long time.
At one time or another.
You guys know Cole Ficarra too?
Yeah,
my boy.
Oh, Cole's one of the instructors. I teach a class at Somerset County Police Academy on Tuesdays, and he's one of the instructors I teach.
Yeah, when we graduated the academy, went to Miami together. Ask him about that trip.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, love that guy.
And he's a good guy, too. You
know? Yes.
And that's one of the things that me and Matt always talk about is you really have to have this balance to teach cops, because Cole's one of the instructors that we teach at the academy with. You got to really thread the needle, because you have to have credibility as a cop and as like a DT instructor, like Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You can't just come in with one or the other. And I think Matt and I have been around a long time, so we have time on the job. We're both kind of known as workers. So when we get on the mat and start teaching Brazilian jiu-jitsu to cops, because cops are students. They don't believe anything. That's what makes them good cops. I would say that you have to show a cop something works. You can't just show them a move and say, now do this, this works. Because the first thing that they say is, that's bullshit. That wouldn't work on me. You have to show them. You have to have credibility. And that's, they're suspicious of everything. You teach cops that are students in your classes. That's what makes them good cops, is that they're suspicious of what you're teaching them. If they went into a domestic violence call, they knocked on the door, the lady shows up, what happened? I fell. Thank you very much. And left. They'd be terrible cops. Mm-hmm. The problem is in the classroom, when we're trying to show DT, they're always like, yeah, but what if? So a guy like Cole or Matt or I, who have been cops for as long as we've been training Brazilian jiu-jitsu, we see both sides. We can answer those what ifs with like real credible info. So
that's cool.
Perfect example is a guy like Cole.
What are you guys doing now? What brings you here today?
Just trying to push as far as our company goes. We kind of started as a way to get all the cops that train together and let's just fight, we'll have fun with it. And then it kind of grew a little traction. So we're like, there's gotta be something we can do with this. So we moved on from selling t-shirts or something like that, trying to involve charities. As we get into like the open mat in Point Pleasant, we start that program up, trying to just build on it.
Yeah, so Matt and I have known each other for a long time. We kind of knew, like, he was in investigations, I was in investigations, our paths would cross on the job, and we knew each other from the gym. And when you know a guy from the gym, you're training and sweating with him, he's like a brother to you. I mean, there are guys from my gym that I don't know their last names, and I drop my kid off at their house. So when you have another cop that you know like that in another department, man, you want to talk about networking, you just cut right through the red tape. You pick up the phone. Especially today, like you call another department today, they're like, yeah, send me an email, verify you. It wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. So to have somebody where you can get a direct line when you need something or another, we knew there was value there. And we know a bunch of cops from all over New Jersey that train jiu-jitsu. So Matt had this great idea a little over a year ago. Hey, let's just get all the cops that we know that train. Let's just have one big open mat and just get them in a room and then have them meet each other. And we'll just have like this mega network of cops that train jiu-jitsu, like the Fight Club. But now we'll know each other. And we did one at All-Star BJJ, which is Matt and I's home gym. And it was amazing. And then from there, the concept, we actually created the company, and the concept just kind of grew.
It's been pretty good. Through investigations, we have to reach out to other departments. But sometimes you kind of play roulette who you're going to end up talking to on the phone. Through this company, it's like we know somebody in Brick, or we know somebody in Rockaway, and it's just been solid connections.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, but we didn't really know where it was. We just knew we had something. And when that took off, like that idea took off of just getting all the cops in the room, we didn't offer any instruction. We didn't teach anything. There was no classes. It wasn't DT. It was like, guys, just train, get to know each other. And from there, Heather from NJWLE reached out to us.
She's now Heather from Street Cop, my man.
Heather from Street Cop. But she was reaching out on
behalf. She's from both, I assume. I would say that.
So she reached out on behalf of the NJWE. Just randomly, she saw that we had this company, which we formed, I think, in November last year. We had a pretty good social media presence just from people reaching, just trying to get people organized. We used like Instagram. And she said, hey, we're looking to do some sort of DT for only women. Would you guys offer that? And one thing about Matt is he always says yes. So he'll pick up the phone and tell me, this is what we're doing. I said, yes. Okay. So our next open mat, we did one. Our plan was to do one a month at a different gym. At the next one, we had the NJWE bring in their women members. And prior to the open mat, we offered an hour of instruction. So Matt and I had to put together like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu curriculum for cops. And I teach it at the academy, so I had a little bit of a base. But to really condense that into a curriculum of like 1 hour, we had to sit and kind of put our thinking hats on. And
we're kind of more opening them up to the possibility of this is what you would see. So perhaps in that 1 hour, we're not really going through defensive tactics that they're going to be great at in 1 hour. But we're giving them, this is a gym. This is what it's like. It's comfortable. If you train here, this is what you'll continue to learn. Cuts down some of those barriers.
So we don't have a home base, which is which actually is a really good part of our program. We go to a different gym. So after our first open mat, we knew we had something on social media. Matt put it out to all the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gyms and said, this is what we want to do. We want to have an open mat for cops that train at a different gym every month. And we didn't know the response that we were going to get, but we were overloaded. I think we had 50 different gyms from all
over the state. We're up to about 70 now.
Reached out and said, have it here. We want to support the cops because that's what we're looking for.
Right.
There's a lot of gyms, but when you're a cop and you want to train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, at this point, cops know this is a good thing for us. But how do you start, right? To walk in to the local gym that says jiu-jitsu where you don't know anybody and you're a cop, that's intimidating. We understand that. We didn't really understand that until we started this company of having the cops that do train get together. We understand that now. So what we did was we had these open mats at a new gym. And here's a perfect example is if I train jiu-jitsu, I already do it, and you're my partner at work. We may work in the same jurisdiction, but we live on opposite ends of the state. So if you say, hey, Scott, I want to start training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're not going to come to my gym. My gym is probably where I live. But where do I tell you to go? And how intimidating is that? Just go find a gym. So now we have a gym in all, pretty much, we have 70 gyms that we can point you to say, I know this gym over here. The guy's a great guy. Go over there. I'll even go with you the first time, right? We're trying to eliminate obstacles for people that don't train.
Are you guys doing this like for profit or is it nonprofit?
We're not good at that.
We are not. So we actually tried when we initially started to make it a nonprofit, but man, there's a lot of rules and you could get in trouble with nonprofits. So we LLC'd the company. We operate happily in the red. We lose money every month. We were selling t-shirts online and we would bring
somehow
t-shirts.
Making less money having sold the t-shirts.
And we just give a lot of stuff away because it's not really about that. It's about getting people. It's really about furthering jiu-jitsu for cops.
Yeah.
Anything we can do to get those people in there and train and making money was never really a part of it for us. So we just recently shut down our online store because
you guys are the best.
Moving forward.
So good.
Moving forward, we have these open mats and we sell tickets through Eventbrite.
Okay.
But that's just really so we know how many people are going
to
get there.
Do you have to sell them?
No, they're free.
They're free.
But yeah. we needed a way to
We just wanted out. To keep track of how many
you
people.
You think cops would pay $5 to come?
We're going to find
not
out.
Not traditionally.
Because what we're doing moving on starting in November is we are going to pick a different charity. So not only do we pick a different school, we're going to reach out to the local union, PBA or FOP in that town and say, hey, what's a good charity? What's something you guys are passionate about?
That's cool.
And then we're going to ask for like a $10 minimum donation for the guys to show up. We're not going to touch the money. The PBA will collect it and then they'll give it to the chat. Like, we just feel like we're getting so many people in a room that are so happy when they're there. Let's see if we can kind of do something with that.
I think that first charity is they provide lunches to the kids in the Point Pleasant to, you know, the lunch program or whatever. Yeah. Like, what could be better?
I know.
So we'll see how it goes.
What's the sponsor a cop thing that I see all over the place?
Adopt a cop.
Yeah. Adopt a cop. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Mitch Aguilar.
Mitch Aguilar. He was a Navy SEAL. He's a big supporter of law enforcement. And he, just like us, when you're a jiu-jitsu guy, you know jiu-jitsu. It's just that you know that cops need this. And as a Navy SEAL and a guy, I think he's a professional fighter, he deals with training a lot of cops. And he's just like, how do I get cops to train? So his platform is really good. He that's a nonprofit you can donate to, and then he will sponsor a police officer to go to a school. So he'll pay the school on the officer's behalf. Another great program.
That's cool. Yes, I've seen a lot of that. I want to make sure it's legit too. I mean, I'll support anything that.
Yeah.
As long as it's legit, I'm good, but I'm down with it.
I've seen a lot of cops go through. The only requirement is they have to post to prove that they're actually training, which is brilliant. And a lot of guys, he pays them their way all the way to blue belt.
Wow. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I've heard that.
So, I mean, by then, that person's already hooked.
Could be two or 3 years.
Yeah, and they're going to continue. They're not going to just stop, but it's a fantastic program.
I mean, clearly, there's a reason why you guys are so motivated. So why are you so motivated? What does jiu-jitsu do for police officers?
It is the idea of being able to control somebody. And it's really hard to explain when you don't know. But there's this period when somebody gets in there and they train and they start to feel what it's like to be overwhelmed by somebody else and not be able to move. And conversely, when you learn a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and it doesn't take much. Training consistently for 6 months puts you light years ahead of another person just by knowing the technique, mm-hmm. by knowing certain.
How many times a week for 6 months to get good?
I think 1 to 2.
Okay.
Realistically, if you could, to separate yourself from the average person,
okay.
You know, to get to a place where you really can see the difference from you, the day you walked in, to 6 months from when you see the new guy walks in. I think 6 months, because jiu-jitsu has become very efficient. Like we talked about the roots of when we trained. There was a lot of stuff that maybe has been filtered out. And now jiu-jitsu it's a better product now. So I think it's you can get better faster.
What do you think about jiu-jitsu versus stuff that has traditionally been taught in police academies or at semi-annual training at the police department? You know, the get back.
If I may.
Yeah, go ahead. This is yours. Take this one.
All of that stuff is pretty much nonsense. When we take BJJ, just on its own, it is pressure tested constantly at high levels. If you watch the fights this past weekend, you have guys winning by using BJJ technique at a high level. It's being pressure tested. I have yet to see get back, get pressure tested anywhere. And I've yet to see, you know, an individual who comes up under the safari land camp of fighting win the title. It just hasn't happened. And if it isn't working there, it may not work where we're at.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 42 years old, and it shouldn't be that a young 25-year-old kid who's wrestled Division I, who's a brick shithouse, it shouldn't be that I would be able to control him and easily manipulate this person on the mats. But Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that's how I know it works. Mm-hmm. You know, in every universe, that guy should kick the ever-living shit at me, but I still drag myself to the gym. And there's a revolving door of these young, strong guys, but the technique takes over. So we know it works. And, you know, it's when, and I see it with you when you teach, when you have something that you know cops really need, you're willing to go to the mountaintops and just shout it. You know, it's you're really passionate about that thing that you have that you want to give to other people that you know that they need. And I think I see that in you when you teach. I see that in the other instructors. They have this subject matter expert knowledge that it's not good for us as cops if we just keep it to ourselves.
Right.
And that's really why we're doing this.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine a more fortunate ending to my career of combining police work, which I've always enjoyed. I love everything about it.
You still love it?
I still love it. Not all the time, maybe a little bit less, but I love the core of it. And combining that with like BJJ, and all of a sudden people are thanking you for helping them, and you're like, but I'm enjoying this more than you probably are. So it's just been an incredible ride.
Yeah, I'll say the same thing. For me, it's almost saved me in a way because, you know, I sit in an office with no windows.
Oh,
I
awful.
Love police.
They got to get you a window, dude.
You would think.
But I love police work. I love going out. I love going to calls. And I'll still pick up my stuff and go when it's a hot call. But, you know, I have paperwork to do.
I get it.
And, you know, you go to a training class, like 19 years on the job, and you sit in a mandatory class, and it's all young guys you don't know. And the guys that you do know, they're retiring year after year. And the next thing you know, you don't know anybody anymore in the job. But this has changed that for me. I go to a gym and I host an open mat and I get to speak in front of these guys and girls and they recognize you. Now I go to a training class or I go to the police academy and I got guys with 2-3 years on coming up and talking to me. I would never know them. That they would just be, I don't recognize anybody. And you see that. I mean, that's the natural progression of your career, but I'm too young for that. I feel in my heart I am. So this has really kind of rejuvenated my career. I'm so thankful for it.
I mean, even at 20 years, you know, the training opportunities usually wind down, like you either shit or you get off the pot. But through this BJJ training and everything, I'm running into like Rich Bruno, who does the firearms training. And I'm like, oh, I want to do that.
You know, he's one of our instructors, right?
Yes.
I do that. But like,
I love that guy.
I've neglected maybe that part of it. And I'm talking all this shit about training. I need to step it up. You have to lead from the front, maybe. You know, you talk with Heather. She's not just saying it. She's doing everything. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool to be in that position.
You know what's good is, like, I think that us as kind of Gen Xers a little bit, maybe that new generation of people who are cool dudes but also challenge a system. Like, that's who we are now. We're the guys in their 40s. Like, just a different breed. We weren't exactly the... We were raised still kind of tough. The last generation of, like, who gives a fuck, right? Like, kind of deal. And, you know, now you got guys going into big positions, been on the job for a long time. And I guess in some way, shape, or form, a blessing for everybody else, because we're sitting here challenging the status quo. Hey, this isn't working. Well, you don't talk back like that. No, we're the bosses now. You can talk to us like that. All right, we're not the old fucking guys who don't want to hear it. We're here. We're going to change. And we're not just saying it. We want to sit, a lot of us, just like you guys, want to leave this thing better than we found it. And we actually found, after 20 years, how to resolve a lot of these issues. And you know what people say? Well, the state doesn't want to listen. They don't want to, this one doesn't want to listen. This commission doesn't want to listen. But they're not going to be that forever. And essentially, you guys will be sitting on that board and saying, yep, time to revamp all this shit. And we could just say what we think we need to say in the interim. So everybody, all of us, come together with one mission, and that's to make this thing better, because it can't go away. Police work's not going anywhere, right? So you can either complain that it sucks or do something about it, but we know where we work. Most people complain that it sucks, don't want to do anything about it. But it wasn't, they weren't chosen to do anything about it. You guys were, right? Like, you gotta think about that. There's a reason why you were chosen to do things like this. As I sit here, I'm just like, oh God, you guys could both kick the shit out of me. It's just kind of annoying.
Well, it was funny, I was listening to you before on the previous podcast, and you're talking about like the same thing. Like, we are going to do it anyway. Don't come to my class then. And it's the same thing. Like, we are here. We're doing it with or without you. You know, like, if work doesn't want to get on board, we'll do it anyway. And I think that that's exactly what you're saying. As far as our generation, we're going to do it. We'll make it better any way we can.
You know, when you're right, when you're right, it's going to work out. Because Matt and I have been banging our heads against the wall for as long as we've been cops, because we knew this was the right move for DT. And we just kept at it. And long, you know, you do it long enough, there was that little change when they rolled out the 2021 use of force. And when they added in that language that said department approved pain compliance techniques, that those, when they put that in the AG guidelines, what does that mean? Your department has to have some sort of approved pain compliance technique. What is that? It's, well, the PTC changed as well, and it's jujitsu.
Right.
So thankfully, we still have a couple of years left on the job, because just because they put jujitsu in the curriculum and they made it up doesn't mean that the right people are.
Oh, I know, dude.
So
it's like, let's case law. Zach Miller's retirement party was this past weekend. I flew to Virginia. It's a small party. We're shooting the shit. It's the same conversation every single time. And I was driving out of his house thinking, like, literally nobody knows what they're talking about, right? There are this handful of cops in this industry that actually know what the fuck they're talking about. And that's across the field in every facet, right? There's a handful of cops who know Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu the way you guys know it. There is almost nobody knows case law. Or some people claim to know it, but they actually don't know it because they can't understand it properly. So they're tasking you with the duty of, you're going to go to a case law class. Well, who the fuck is teaching it, right?
Yep.
For me, I'm like, who's teaching it? We got a guy from this company, the Academy. Every weekend I hear the horror stories. You wouldn't believe what these guys are telling us, right? bad-mouthing this company. Why? I don't know. Do I call them? No, I don't care. I'm not calling this guy and giving him the benefit of the doubt of these two guys that were saying, don't do what these guys do. Really? For some odd reason, about a million people have subscribed to what the fuck we say you should do. I don't know. You tell me. It's like the passenger side approaches. Oh, I don't do the passenger side approaches. You don't have to. But just don't say they don't work.
Yep.
Because they do.
Right.
Right. And when are we going to have that conversation? When are people just going to lay the sword down and go, you know what? We were wrong. You know? And I would do the same thing if I thought I was wrong about it. But you know, we got videos. Hey, I'm on the passenger side in this video. I'm alive because of you. One just gave me my timeline yesterday. But we get this stuff nonstop. But yeah. Then you got guys teaching at these fucking podunk little places and are like, don't listen to that guy. Really? What have you done? Tell me what you've done.
What have you offered?
What have you offered? Yep. You're showing up here to a bunch of recruits that don't know any better and they're not giving you any pushback. Come teach me that shit, right? Come teach us that stuff and we'll tell you what you're doing wrong, right? I'm the DT instructor. If you take your finger and you put it like this, make a gun, stick it under somebody's own, lift up. That's a good, how about like the pinches behind the legs? Right. Remember that?
Yep.
Like take your knuckle, dig it in somebody's ear and twist it like this. I remember asking, I've said this on several occasions. In my first academy, I said, does this stuff actually work? And the instructor went, nah, not really. And I'm like, why are we learning it then? He's like, that's what I got to teach you. He basically said like, not really, because we had a big guy. If I use it against him, that's big ass dude here. Is it, oh, you're telling me a clavicle pull is going to yank him to the ground? Like literally, like I remember being told like hit him in the shoulder and then drag your knuckles down her back and that's a good way to win. And you're like, have you guys ever been in a fight in your life?
Yeah.
Right? I've been in fights.
Do you remember the Michigan takedown?
No.
Where they take the PR-24.
Oh, yeah. And you lift it up and try to get...
Yeah, and that's what we were being taught up until, what, this past year?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And, you know, there is a way that, fortunately for us, that we could test the methods. I'll put BJJ against any of the old school, and let's just see who wins. My money's on us every time.
And that's where it comes to being credible. You know, the one thing me and Matt, we're on the open mat every single month. And we have guys lining up to come and roll with us, but you have to roll with these guys. You can't stand up there and preach Brazilian jiu-jitsu and then go sit on the sides and watch. Like they want to come challenge you and we take our lumps and we're out there rolling and, you know, 10, 12 matches at some of these things, well, 5 minute rounds.
Damn. It's tough, dude.
You know, but you have to, right? You can't sell a product that you're not willing to display.
Sure.
You know, and
we have the humility to say, maybe we were wrong, maybe we were right.
Right.
But yeah, this is what we know.
It was funny meeting Chad Lyman.
Oh, Chad's a good dude. Did you hear me talk about him before?
Yeah, I was just talking about him.
Yeah, Chad's a good dude.
He's great. Yeah, you know, he's been doing this podcast since way back.
He's got like 17 kids. You know that, right?
I didn't know about that.
I think he has 8 or 10.
Yeah.
We have 8, Frank? Eight kids. I love that guy, bro. He's a good dude, bro.
Great.
He's a solid guy.
I was at a training. He was running and they were rolling live. So I jump in. And this guy that runs this company and everybody respects Chad Lyman. If you're into grappling and police work, you know who he is. And this guy's tapping me on the shoulder like, let's go. And I'm like, man, respect. Like, win or lose, it doesn't matter. The guy just wants to go.
You guys know Jay Wadsworth too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know him personally, but obviously through social media.
Know of him. Yeah.
Yeah. Jay's a good dude.
Yep.
That's one of the things when we took Chad's course, we took his 4-day course, the PJJ course. He had some of the instructors and our company actually helped broker that. When Matt met Chad at one of the trainings, he said, we got to get you to New Jersey again. This stuff is too good. And we organized it through our company and then we ultimately held it at one of the police academies. His instructors came out and every lunch, it was a tough course. I mean, it was 4 hours in the morning of on the mats training. You get a lunch break and those four instructors expected you to roll live rounds on your lunch break. It was a hard course, but everybody in the class respected those guys because they were teaching you something in the morning and then they were going hard at lunchtime. And then you had no choice but to be like, these guys know what they're doing. They're tough.
Yeah, they're tough dudes, right?
Instant buy-in.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as they're on the mats, like they were ready before we were every day to roll. And it's, you can't let that happen. You have to get out there with them. Yeah. It's just incredible.
It's high speed too. Like just constantly moving in this class. It's not boring at all, right?
No, not at all. But it's also good too, because the code for concepts, it's conceptual. So you don't have to know, first I do this move, then I do this, because it's not going to be like that in police work. The speed of something is going to be it's going to be crazy and fast. His idea is, look, we're looking to control the hips. We're looking to control the head. We're looking at, you know, these are the concepts. How you do that, we'll give you some suggestions. But if you're going to fight, make sure you're fighting in the right direction and all your energy is going towards this concept, and you're going to be okay. That translates really easy to police, because, you know, you don't, it's not like a fight. It's not like a tournament where you know that you're going to start standing with one foot on the line and they're going to blow the whistle. You don't know how that's going to start. That could start all of a sudden. You turn your back for a second and the guy takes a swing at you. You have to be able to be ready to put that stuff to work at any moment. And I think that's where his concepts are so good.
Yeah, I think he does a great job building up. All the drills, everything is just working towards that complete finish technique, whatever it is, whether it was hand fighting to the arm drag. He just doesn't show one technique, just builds on it. It was a very good learning environment for that.
It was a little intimidating too, because we've been teaching our curriculum throughout the last year, things that we've adopted from jiu-jitsu for police. And then I teach at the academy maybe 6 or 7 years. And now you have Chad Lyman's crew where they're the best. And they're like, I hope I'm not doing something the opposite of them. So it was nice to see that there was some continuity between, hey, those guys are great at jiu-jitsu and this is what they think is good for cops. And that's a lot of what we're doing here. Now, their stuff was a little, you know, more put together, and we learned a lot. But the great thing about Chad was, after the fact, Matt talked to him. He said, hey, we're going to do a seminar. Can we use some of your stuff? We're not like your instructors. And what did
Chad
say?
Yeah, he was like, whatever you need to do. He was just great about it.
He was like, use whatever you want. Yeah. Use my stuff. He goes, I'm just happy it's out there. And I'm like, yes, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, sounds like me.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Guys always, I got a guy the other day. He's like, hey, I got to use, we're writing a program for recruits. I went, brother, you know, whatever you got to do. You need videos, I'll send them over to you. Whatever you need, anything I can do to help you. I want people to be successful, right? I've got to procure revenue at some point to grow the business. And again, when you understand how that works, I'm not trying to.
No, we clearly don't understand.
But yeah, like once I can explain to people, like, oh, I see why you guys got to make money. Like, you want more cops to know this stuff? We have to make more money. Because if it was just me, you wouldn't know what you guys know. There wouldn't be this kind of platform to reach all the hearts, souls, and minds of the police officers in the country, and actually nationally as well. The other question I have for you is, how does conventional tactics look from the outside public view in the violence spectrum versus Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? You're swinging a stick at somebody, yeah, trying to just murder them with a stick, trying to gain compliance. How does that look versus the two videos we saw in the past 2 weeks of the guy from here in Jersey who flipped the guy around on his face about four seconds at a Wawa, had him in cuffs in about 2 more seconds. And the guy wrote to us, Johnny Guns on Instagram. And he wrote, bro, I'm a big fan of you guys. I know exactly who you are. And he said, this is why I train. See how fast that went? Yeah. And the girl in Chicago.
Yeah, pulled the hockey. That's one of my favorite. That video
proves
is
a big
incredible.
Point, right? It proves a big point.
We know that it works, and we know that it's smoother too. And when I say smooth, not like action movie smooth, but like you said, when you're striking somebody and hitting somebody, first of all, there's people out there that can take a shot.
Oh,
how successful are you going to be?
How hard can you hit?
And how hard can you hit?
Because most people can't hit as hard as they think they can.
No,
right.
I have those nightmares about that too. You ever have those nightmares where you're hitting?
Oh, yeah,
right? Arms are hitting, like, it's not and working,
no
right?
Effect.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and we teach, so one of the big takedowns, so there's all sorts of ways to take somebody to the ground in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and wrestling. But we found, and it was nice to see that the Chad Lyman agreed with us, and is a body lock takedowns, where you kind of get in very close and you lock your arms around somebody's hips, because the hips are the engine of the body. So if you can control somebody's hips, and then you don't have to use a lot of athleticism if you off balance them to get them to the ground. And it works on all sorts of people. And it's great on somebody who's really combative. But it also works on, we're cops, we go to everything. So one of the examples I use when I teach it is this gonna work on the crazy drunk who wants to punch your lights out? Absolutely. But can I do this to the 200 pound eighth grader who's going crazy in the classroom and we gotta safely take them down without hurting them? Absolutely. And I go in and I show, you can talk the whole time. Hey, look, I'm gonna calm down, I'm gonna put you on the ground, and I walk them through the move. Is this gonna work on the 80-year-old lady who just you know, sliced her husband's arm and now we got to lock her up and she's going out of control. Yeah, can I do this without breaking her hip? Probably, because it's all about controlling. So I can turn up the gas on it or I can turn it down to fit the situation. You can't do that with a stick.
You guys will just come over to my house later and just fucking do karate in the basement.
I do have mats in my basement. Yeah.
I got mats in my basement too, dude. Yeah. You guys ever see my gym in the basement? I'll show you pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a legit gym.
It's awesome.
It was worth its weight in gold. I mean, no different than probably putting some mats to roll around in your basement or your garage.
Well, you know, that's kind of one of the other things that we realize is with training, especially something like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to somebody who's never done it before, we got to remove obstacles. Like you said, I got to remove the 20-minute drive. I got to remove the getting ready, because if you're thinking about not doing it, one of those obstacles is going to be your excuse. So now we've reached the guys that are going to train anyway. They come to our open mats. So our next goal is, how do we get the rest of them, the ones that aren't training but probably want to? Because any little obstacle like that, the school is too far. They only have night classes. They only it's too much money. We can't remove all those obstacles.
Right.
So we kind of found a little bit of a workaround. It's been a little bit successful in New Jersey, and that's like departmental clubs.
Yeah.
So let's say I'm the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy that's going to train anyway at my department, and I want all the guys to train, and I tell them all the time you should train. They go, yeah, I'd like to, but excuse. So we've relayed to them, start a club, find a place in your jurisdiction, do it off duty, the fire department, the local high school, the local gym, get a small bit of mats and say to your coworkers, I'm going to teach you guys. Once a month, once every 2 weeks, let's show up here. We're going to do it right after work, right before work, off duty, and commit to training those guys. Keep going to your school too and learning, you know, get water from the well, but bring it back to your guys. Get them addicted. There's going to be some guys, maybe they stop showing up, but you're going to plant the seed with 3, 4, 5, and it's going to get in their head. And then that's when they get the bug. They're going to start going to other gyms, or they just keep coming to you and you just grew a program at your department.
What about like department heads understanding, subscribing to this and forcing it? And I got to say this just because when you're, I don't know, you know, and I've got my thoughts on this and my theories, this is something that's pretty non-negotiable. I put this in the same categories, I guess, having to qualify in some sense. Most of it's non-negotiable. And you have very unmotivated people. Very unmotivated. So why not make it mandatory? And there's probably reasons why you should and why you shouldn't. I know why not. Because if you're the accident-prone bum, you're going to take this opportunity to get hurt, get out for 4 months. You know, but you know, what's the likelihood of you convincing somebody that this was important? I don't know. You know?
I think I'm on board with them making it mandatory for the new hires. You know,
because they're bought in already, right? Yeah, they're bought in. They think it's something they have to do.
I think, just like, you know, if we mandate people that have been there a while, do I want them there if they don't want to be there? Not that much.
Yeah, I agree.
The new hires is good. That makes sense.
I think you have to take what you can get and move on with them. You're not going to get a full buy-in from everybody because they're all at different places in their career. And let's face it, too. Fighting is the most primal thing that we do. So you could beat me 100-1 in ping pong, and if I beat the shit out of you in the parking lot, who walks away the winner?
I know.
So now you have all these guys that work together and break balls in the locker room. Well, if there's a chance that you're going to have to like roll around with them, That's unsettling to some people. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get excuses.
You got to have a humility, right? You got to deploy that humility.
I think it's great. I think the people that are going to do it and put it and just say, look, we need to do this. And if I get, you know, whooped by a rookie, that's how it's going to go. And then there's other people they're just not going to put themselves in the middle. We got to move on without them. This train's leaving. You're either on it or you're not.
Well, you know, I often say that I'm not here to try to convince the existing administrations. I'm training the new ones. And it, just like you and I and the three of us here, 21, 20 years ago, we were the fucking, dude, we're the old guys.
Yeah.
Right? Remember, do you ever think you would ever say that?
It's weird.
It's dawns on me more and more each day that I'm that guy.
Now, I feel like I'm 28. I'm not going to lie to you. So you might think, I feel fucking good, dude. But I recognize that, like, oh, wow. I can't believe we're here. And it sounds so fucking weird to say, but we are. Again, I feel physically, mentally really, really good. I don't feel like I'm an old guy. Like, I don't know, when we came on, I feel like the guys who had 20 plus years in the job were just old fucking cranky.
They were old. They had long mustaches and they were fucking old.
Cranky, right?
Yeah.
Miserable.
But I think there's also been a quiet focus on the good things that have, like health, fitness. I think that has increased in value as we moved on. So I think you're starting to see that.
There's no question about it, dude. Nobody ever trained Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Nobody ever considered their health. Look, think about the old guard, what they look like. Big bellies, right? Like just miserable, shoveling fucking muffins down their throat at fucking muster. Yeah, there's still a lot of these fucking big gavones all around the place. I travel the country, dude. The fact that these men and women don't consider this to be a dangerous job and think because they work at podunk nowhere that they're never going to fight anybody. And we hear the stories of the men and women who are on this podcast who were shot in the line of duty or severely injured. Ralph Friedman talks about it. Ralph Friedman had a career-ending crash, and he was T-boned at like 80 miles an hour in 1985. That ended his career. So if you ever meet Ralph, he walks with a limp. Ralph's the most decorated New York City detective in the history of New York City. And the doctors told him, had you not been built the way you are physically, muscular, with all this, you probably would have died. Mm. Just on that alone, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I look at people and I'm just like, Christ, man, how are you not considering this job to be this dangerous?
I tell people too, is look at your kids. Look at your family.
Because they don't give a fuck. Dude. I don't know what's going to motivate them. You could try. Still, they're motivated for that fucking 10 minutes, right? And then they're like back out. And like all of a sudden it's, hey, you want to go to Applebee's tonight? Yeah, I'll go to Applebee's. Yeah. Yeah, let's have two martinis and a fucking, I don't know if they make martinis at Applebee's, but like, you know, margaritas. Yeah. And, you know, then you're shit faced. You're eating fucking wings. But then you come back to work. You're fucking 310 pounds. You can't breathe. You can't run.
I think a part of the problem is them waiting for a motivation. Like, that can get you started maybe, but to create a habit, you're just doing it. You're not waiting for some fleeting feeling. You're just doing it. And guys aren't doing that all the time.
But it doesn't matter. The public expects you to know this stuff.
Oh, too. I know.
You know,
it's a different time.
Like if you're the training guy or not to pick on training guys or accreditation guys, but if you have a desk job and you're out of police work in your brain, but you go to you pick up your breakfast burrito and some shit goes down, nobody's going to, I'm sorry, I'd only do accreditation. The public's going to look at you and say, you know, all that like cop stuff, go get that guy. There's never going to be a point in your career that you're not going to be expected from the public to know this.
I know,
so
dude.
So why not know it?
I always tell people, if you have the audacity to wear a uniform or stop cars and you don't have the audacity to do a few of these things, you have no business being here anymore.
I remember when you were talking at the NJ Women in Law Enforcement convention, and you had mentioned, you were talking about the asking the passenger for their identification, knowing the laws and stuff like that. It was very similar to what Scott will talk about is, part of the problem is not knowing what you can do.
Right.
And it's making people hesitate, whether it's hands-on or taking action to get into the car and maybe find something in there. It's learning what you can and cannot do.
That's a great point, because when we teach, we have to have context in everything that we do. Like I said, you can't just teach the move and expect somebody to remember it. But if I tell you, so when I start off with takedowns, I start from way out and I put somebody in a situation. So I say, hey, it's 12 o'clock. You're in a neighborhood. You see a guy walking down the street. He's wearing clothing that doesn't fit the weather. We're going to stop and probably talk to that guy, right? Okay. That's a field interview. What distance should we have from him? Can we pursue him if he runs? Can we compel ID? What can we do? And you start getting their brains thinking. Oh, so I don't have much, right? If he tells me to fuck off, I got to fuck off. How far away should I be from him? And I said, generally, what I say is, I want to be able to see his facial expressions. I want to see his hands. I want to see bulges, but I don't want to be so close that if he rushes me, I can't react. So I want to be, 8 to 12 feet. I want to be able to see all from his feet to his head without having to move my head. Now, let's say we get a call while we're talking to this gentleman down the street. There was a car burglary. The caller said that it's a male suspect wearing a hoodie and shorts. And she sees him on the Ring camera 10 minutes in the past. Did this just change? He matches his description. Now, can I compel ID? Can I give reasonable commands? If he runs, can I pursue him? Yes. I now have a detention situation. What distance should I be now? Where should I stand? Not face to face, maybe off to an angle, right? What can I do with this person? If he's combative, can I give reasonable commands? Or if he's not listening to me, can I give reasonable commands like have a seat, sit down while you're in this detention? Yeah, so we kind of work in a little bit of the law because I don't want to see that hesitancy. I want to see somebody using command authority because they know that they can. And I think that's part of the problem. You could teach this stuff all day, but if you don't know where it applies to your job, it's not going to help you. You're going to hesitate.
A good cop is a well-rounded cop. Yep. You know, I always tell these guys I want to do interdiction. I'm like, you know, how often are you guys rolling around on mats? Right, do interdiction all day. That's great. It's the best kind of police work. Change my mind. Right, to go out and if you're not an interdiction officer, what kind of officer are you? That's my question, because interdiction, quote unquote, is a police officer who goes on the road and tries to stop crime on the roadways. And we know that crime is always on the roadways. Yep. So if you're on the roadways and you're not stopping crime, what kind of cop are you? That's my first question. So that's great. And you should really have pride in that. It's a blast and it's fun. When you learn that game, it's a lot of fun. But how good are you with the gun? Right? How good are you with the law? How good are you? Know, I mean, I watched the videos. Guys like, what do you think of this job? And I'm like, yeah, great job. When did you think you needed to read Miranda? And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, no, because I know when you did. Right. Well, what do you think? I mean, the guy was under arrest. Well, I don't know. He found 10 pounds of cocaine. And you started asking him more questions about the cocaine. There's only 914 pieces of case. Let's say those questions were no good. But, you know, hey, roll the dice, man. You know, you don't have to go to take this training. Keep going to fucking classes that put you on a creeper and slide you under a car to look for fuck. Like, guys, this is real stuff you need to know. And, like, how good are you in a fight? And you're out here by yourself on the side of the highway. How good are you in a fight? How good are you with those guns? And all this stuff is important. So if you're a person who likes to go out and be proactive, which I imagine most people who listen to this are, great. But, like, don't forget, maybe take a move and shoot course once a fucking year. At least get some principles down. The best thing I ever took was a move and shooting course. And that was at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. And what it was is a guy, and I want to implement all this stuff that I discovered over the years. Guy sits behind a piece of plexiglass. You got SIM guns. And this course is lined up like, almost looks like an abandoned city street. So you pop up, you shoot him with your SIM gun. You go down. You pop back up again. He smokes you with the fucking, he'll hit you right in the fucking face with the paintball gun. Right, so he shoots a paintball gun, you're shooting SIM rounds because got to mimic a gun, right? So I got my fucking teeth kicked in. And I said, why did I keep getting shot? He goes, we're going to run you through the course a second time and show you the difference. He goes, because you kept coming up at the same place. This is a move and shoot course. If you go move to a different place and then re-pop up, that's what we're trying to teach you here, that you probably won't get shot in the fucking head. If you're predictable where you're going to pop up, I mean, and think about that. How many people are thinking about moving and shooting in a gunfight? Nobody. No, why does nobody know that? Why does 99.9% of cops have no idea that if you're in a gun battle, moving and shooting, even from if you have a car for cover, going from one tire to the next tire, if you possibly can, and just popping up in a different location might save your life. Why is that not shared? I remember going to the police academy where we talked about, I don't want to say it. I always tell this story in class. I got a guy, this is your instructors at the academy. This guy's no fucking business being an instructor. But I remember this scenario because where I worked before this, we had scenarios. I was on the team that helped design the scenarios, but now I'm a recruit again in New Jersey, which fucking blows. So I walk up to the car and the guy's got a gun in his lap. I draw my little fake gun out. I go, hands up, gonna work and see him. Keep your hands out of the car, right? Grab my radio, start making radio contact. I get the gun right at him. Oh, out of roll. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And the guy's like, what are you doing? I go, he has a gun on his lap. He goes, yeah, I know, we put it there. He goes, you need to retreat back to cover and go into a felony traffic stop. I went, so you want me to give up all this ground I've gained where I can see him with the gun? This is my hand to God and my children. This is what he told me. He goes, yeah, you and your fucking, this town you work for, he referenced it. He goes, the shit that you guys do down there, I go, and I'm saying to myself, I can't believe this is the academy. I can't believe this guy just told me to get myself killed as a recruit. And I'm like, if I didn't know any better, right? If I didn't know any better, I would just be like, oh, okay. So in the future, if this ever happens, I'm running for my life when I could have just had my gun on this, trained on this guy. And if he goes for the gun, I can just smoke him. Right? No, run back to the car, open the door and go to a felony traffic stop. You're going to get us fucking murdered. And that's the stuff that drives me nuts. You don't have to like me, but we can't allow cops to get killed anymore.
And little things like you said, just not popping your head up in the same area. That's something so simple. But if you've never heard it before, it's never going to be with you when you need it. And we teach little things, and all these other instructors that are out there that have these subject matter expert tips, you may not ever become a master in one area, but you should strive to be. But in the meantime, just having your ears opening, listening to podcasts, training yourself, is going to put those thoughts in your head. They're going to be there when you need them. Oh, yeah. I believe that.
Oh, for sure, dude. You know, for sure.
Like we've said it over and over and over again that it is on the police officer themselves to get themselves trained.
Yeah.
You cannot rely on your agency.
You cannot wait to get picked.
And yep. I'm
in life.
100%.
In life.
Admin guy. You know, I'm an admin guy. I'm trying to schedule 29 people to get to Able ICAT, to get to Resiliency, to get to every other mandatory training.
Just go into our catalog. Just go.
But, you know, it's at a certain point as an officer, you got to send yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, are you going to wait, like you said, are you going to wait to get picked? Are you going to wait?
What's your life worth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. What's that? Listen to the men and women who've been on this podcast that I'll tell you, I didn't think it was going to happen to me. You know what it's like to have to call your wife and tell her you're going to die.
Oh, my God.
Like, do you know what that's like? You're not going to be here anymore. On what? I didn't feel like it. I didn't want to spend the money. Right? Like, are you fucking crazy? You cannot take this job lightly. Like, at a very minimum, I always say, like, at a very minimum, learn how not to die. That's where you got to start.
That's it.
You can forego my shit, how to catch bad guys, how to use the law appropriately. I'd rather see you get fired for fucking malfeasance of fucking negligence, not knowing the law and doing illegal searches because you had no clue, rather than us being at your fucking funeral and there's 60 Harley Davidsons coming down the street and your fucking kids are crying, holding a flag. Like, I'll take you alive, fired any day of the week. That's just the truth. I'd rather you be alive and fired because you just didn't want to do it. So learn how to defend yourself, learn how to apprehend people, learn how to tactically stay alive first, and then everything else.
I couldn't agree more.
Not in the type of job where you go home, put your feet up, and that's the end of it. It's always there. You go to the store, you're on the job. You go anywhere. And how do you not want to be great at it? How do you not want to be great at
Well, you took the job. You elected to be here, motherfucker. Yep. Nobody said you're forced to be a cop. And you're like, fuck, I don't want to be here, right? And I always tell these guys when they were new, don't let these other motherfuckers get in your head. Don't. Because they're going to. If you let them get in your head, and I'd watch them. You know, you get half the guys going to the bums at 7-Eleven, hanging out. They've got them convinced this job's not worth it. Fuck this place, da-da-da. And you got the handful of people who are seeing guys like me and the other guys that I'm working with and going, I won't be like you guys. Well, come on along. You have a choice. You have a path. You can take that path or take this path. You're probably going to like us more. Is it going to hurt a little bit in the beginning? Yeah, sure. We get mudslung our way. We're wave makers, right? But it's worth it.
There's more of that kind now than there is of the other. And I can tell you that I remember being a young guy, wanted to go out, do all this stuff and, you know, pushing the envelope, stopping cars after 2 a.m., getting the talkings to. God forbid you bought your own flashlight or you bought your own piece of equipment. You would get ridiculed. Oh, you loser, you slapper, pounder. Now I see these guys, they're like, look at this cool flashlight that I just bought. It's $187. You bought your own flashlight? It's $187? They're into it. And there's more of them now than there are the guys that are going to make fun of
them. Yeah, because of guys like you and I and organizations like this, dude, because somebody had to fucking step up and do something, you know? And everybody else, by the way, too, whoever has credit to this as well, to make police work cool. And listen, don't listen to what people are telling you about who you are or telling what your future is going to be. You know, then there's a lot of things you can make. There is nobody's got you handcuffed.
Yep.
You don't like where you work. It's never going to change. Things don't look good. Who says you got to stay? You don't like police work. This is not for you. You don't got to stay here. We don't want you. Right. Don't stay because you need a job. Start actively look on Indeed. You know,
people are cool. The recruits and new hires are people that have time on the job now. They're such a commodity now. You know, we're all these agencies are looking to hire constantly, and it's gone from, you know, where you'd graduate the police academy on an alternate route and you were hoping to get a job. Those people are picking now. So there's a lot of they're coming into the job knowing they have a lot of value. And that's kind of staying with them. And I actually think that's a positive thing.
Well, sure, dude.
It's hard for us as administration to find people, but you're getting somebody who's showing up.
Your reputation will find people.
It's true.
If you guys set the precedent of who you are, they will come to you, right? That's just the truth. Your administration is known to be fuckheads. Bro, you know some of these agencies that you know right in your county,
yep.
Right in, I know. I could literally sit here and go through and tell you which agencies are which, and the recruits know too.
Yep.
There are agencies that are so fucking bad, so heavy-handed in the administration, and that, bro, you're seeing for the first time, people just quit. They're just done. Walking off. Just, nope. Where are you going next? Nowhere. You got 12 years on. Yeah, no, I'm going to go fucking work at Home Depot as a manager. Like, why? I'm not doing this anymore with these fucking people. And you're just not at a place now where people don't have options. We have the internet.
Right.
Fucked. Yeah. And police salaries in New Jersey are substantial, but elsewhere, they're just not enough to keep people. Like, bro, Home Depot's making more money. Walmart, you ever see these videos like where cops are leaving? Walmart pays more than the police department. Wow. If you give them a why and a purpose, I mean, I'm talking to somebody right now. I know them personally. And this person said, we don't make the most, but we're the out of the whole area here, there's a lot of cops, a lot of police departments. We don't make the most, but this is the best place to be a cop. I said, well, what's the pay significant difference? She goes, it's this much and this much. And I said, that's pretty substantial. And her response was, but I wouldn't leave. Well, don't you want more money? Yeah, but I want to be a cop. Not willing to leave. I'm telling you, you get the reputation, right? And, you know, people like, we don't need that kind of unit. We don't need a, if you heard that your agency had a, I'm telling you, this is as simple as this. If you guys put out like some kind of tactical crime unit, right? Like, yep. Two guys on comp time. You can't pay them, you can't do the salary, but you can trade them time for time. We can give you guys time back. Bro, you know an agency right by you where Rob works.
Yep, I was just thinking of that.
Everybody was fucking going there because they heard that they were out, they were allowed to go on the highways on their days off, 2-3 guys at a clip, and go do criminal interdiction on 78. Who doesn't want to do that?
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, yo, they hire in, like, they get to do what? Yeah, they get to go out and be cops. You don't need a dog. You can actually work with what you've got. Make a part-time unit and get everybody a crack at it. You know, what do you guys have? We have a crime suppression unit. Well, how's that work? Well, we take guys from patrol every week. And you get to come in. We give you a TAC vest. Invest a couple grand. Everybody gets a TAC vest issued here. And you guys get to go on the road and be proactive for 6 hours. And we have two guys 3 times a week who do that. You think you have hiring issues? I just fix your hiring issues. And you're going to attract the right people.
Yep.
You're going to attract guys like me, him, you, who are going to go, that's where I want to go. Bro, I'm telling you, I'm taking all this data in. Motherfuckers are taking half the pay to go work for the better agency. I'm telling you, I'm watching it because they want to go out and do cool cop shit.
It's 30 years too, right? I mean, it matters. You know, where you spend that time matters.
Bro, these are simple things that administrations can do. Or they can say to people like, hey, we might have the highest paid here, but Chief so-and-so, Captain so-and-so, and Sergeant so-and-so, we got your back here, man. Like, we ain't nobody fucking going to hang you out here to dry, and you'll hear our reputation on that as long as you ain't doing anything illegal. And if you make mistakes, we got your back. We're not going to sting you out there. And anytime something comes up, we don't take the fucking overtime. We'll give it to you guys as new guys. We don't take the traffic jobs. We fucking administrators I work for that were working jobs that, dude, of all people, right? That you had new guys making $41,000 with 3 kids at home who were veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, couldn't get off duty jobs because the $194,000 your captain was working the $35 an hour mall jobs. It's fucking crazy. Fucking crazy. How do you live with yourself like that? How do you go to work and saying, this is fair? Go do something. Like, bro, you're making 4 times base pay of this guy.
Right?
But when you say like, hey, we don't got to do that to you here. Some other places do. We don't do that here. We're actually, the chief doesn't even tolerate it.
I mean, the new generation, that, like I said, they have a different value on things. They value their time off. They value their individualism. And you have to learn how to harness that. And make that work for you.
Well, dude, everybody has a personality and nobody's going to blindly listen anymore. So you have to reverse engineer every single person and what they want. And you got to train your command staff, your lower staff, on how to see that, recognize it, and tell them it's okay. They don't have to listen to every fucking order. Unless there's an emergency you need them to obey. We should be listening to them and saying, what do you think? People want to be seen, heard, and acknowledged. Right? So why are we not doing that? Shut up, sit down, it's muster. Know your place, rookie. What if this rookie had the fucking best idea there is, right? The whole resolution was sitting with this guy. I always say the best chiefs will never be chiefs. The truth.
Well, that's why it's like valuable having Scott climb up through the ranks. He's, you know, I've known him a long time. We're totally different people. Definitely different off-duty dress code and whatever. His department is in great hands. Like, he's one of us.
But when people find that out, right, when they ask other guys at work, they're like, hey, they have an opening. Yeah, no, come here to guy. You hear it all the time. Next chief's a good dude, bro.
Yep.
We got this guy up, and he's just got made this. He got made captain. Like, bro, this is a good dude, man. You want to work for this guy? He's a cop's cop. How many times you hear it? He's a cop's cop, or she's a cop's cop.
I love it. And it's funny. I sit on the interview panel, and I don't know whether it's my ears or maybe they, through the word of mouth, know who I am, but a lot of recruits. or new hires or candidates will say, what are your interests? What are your hobbies? Well, I like hiking. I like jujitsu also. I do jujitsu.
They're telling you, yeah.
I'm like, got that one down.
Yeah, 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 I get brownie points to the boss.
Yeah, I can see it though. Like that's, but that's great. I mean,
that's what you want.
It's what you want, right?
Who wouldn't you, why wouldn't you want somebody who's going to ready to roll around?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying in a sense of like, we're getting out there to beat the shit out of people. No, no, no. We want people who are trained professionals who look the part and can subdue people and control situations, not these out of control calamities of human beings.
Well, the hobbies have to match the profession. You know, barbecues and bar nights out are great, but that can't be your hobby. Like, what parallels you into law enforcement? What makes you type A or aggressive or physical if you're not doing anything in your hobby? You know, grappling, weightlifting, boxing, kickboxing, something. You have to do something that is somewhat aggressive on your time off.
And it translates into confidence too. I can't communicate to somebody that I'm calm and relaxed if I'm not. You know, if I'm nervous about a physical altercation, you know the call when you're arriving up there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know you're getting out of the car. You're feeling those butterflies. That never goes away. But when you're confident, you're not so tunnel visioned. You can think, you can do things because you've been in conflict before. It's simulated combat, but it's stressful to walk into a gym and see the guy's car that usually beats the shit out of you, and he's here tonight, and I'm going to take another beating tonight. That makes you a different type of person that you still show up there. So when you get out of the car on that hot call, you're just a little more confident, which translates into a little calmer, which gets picked up by that person. And if they're thinking of doing something, your demeanor, because you're confident, might have just shut that off in them. And I think a lot of times it does.
For sure.
You know,
there's no doubt. They realize, dude. They know. I've had people say it to me. Yeah, I was going to run, but I thought if you caught me, I'm like, well, it's a good assumption. Right. But like, they're like, nah, I can't tell many times I've had people say to me, like, yeah, I know I was going to jail. I'm like, why is that? They're like, because you're fucking street.
It's funny. I was called to a car stop as a supervisor for an officer that we both know. And it was a sovereign citizen. It was a gentleman was going through all the rhetoric of I'm traveling, I'm not driving, I don't need a driver's license, and all the things that you know, people that portray that mindset.
Yeah, the nuts.
Communicate.
Yeah.
And he asked to speak with a supervisor. I happened to be the only supervisor working, so I show up to the call. I walk up to the window, and I'm, you know, everyone's a little nervous because what's next, right? We're kind of forced to sometimes pull people out of the cars and get physical with them when they refuse to comply. But I had a little opportunity to talk with this person back and forth, and I was just suddenly, slowly closing doors, closing the avenues that he was going. And then finally, I got to the end. And I said, all right, you said all the things that you're going to say, and I've said all the things that I'm going to say. So we're kind of at an impasse here. And I really would like this to go well. And he looked at me and he goes, man, where are you training at? And I started laughing. I go, why? He goes, I see your ears. And we started talking about training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And that was it. I said, can you give your information to the sergeant now? Oh, okay, man. And it went that way. And I don't know if it was the fact that I was a little calmer because I'm used to being in conflict, or just that I just, you know, he looked at me and saw that, you know, this may not go well for him. I know in that situation it worked, and we didn't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, those ears, they speak volumes.
They're awful.
Yeah, they're not great in wedding photos, but
do they hurt?
And when it gets cold, yeah, because
my brother-in-law's got him too. Tough kid.
Yeah, it's ugly and it's weird. It's not everybody gets it. It's just the shit.
Oh, most people know what it is now. What it means.
It makes haircuts awkward.
Yeah, I get it, dude. I get it. Anyway. Where can they find you?
Just on Instagram right now.
At NJLEO Jiu-Jitsu.
It's cool. Yeah. And you guys will post your shit on there when you have classes coming up and stuff.
Always.
Yeah. I got to say, one of the reasons why we are successful is Matt is fantastic at social media. I mean, it really, if you're not on social media and you're not posting things, it's like it didn't happen. So I'm so lucky to have
Where's everybody's attention, right? You're on your phone nonstop. Yep.
But he's done such a good job of that. So I think that's more than half of why we're successful.
Well, I appreciate you guys both being here today. It's fucking phenomenal. It's refreshing to see the new guard coming out. And I know who you guys are because I was the same, right? We were all fucking full of piss and vinegar and shit when we first started. And like now we're just like the calmer, more stoic, you know, more well-spoken wisdom. watching all this shit go down, good or bad, and just be able to come out and try to give back, you know, to what we've learned, and so we can make the next generation great. But you guys are awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Frankie's going to fight you guys right after this. We're going to clear the fucking tables out. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.